So, nach diesem singulären Event, verehrte Gäste, nach dieser Preisverleihung schalten wir jetzt emotional wieder einen Gang zurück und kommen wieder mehr zum Kernthema.
Genau, habt ihr super Tech gemacht.
Oh, das Mikro ist an. Oh, spannend. Hoffentlich gehen Sie nicht direkt an die Bar. Ja, jetzt ist er vom Sender. Also, wir kommen wieder mehr zum Kernthema des Technical Summit, obwohl man beim Titel der ersten Keynote des heutigen Tages doch auch von einem eher emotional Summit sprechen könnte. Microsoft loves Open Source. So ist der Vortrag überschrieben. Unser nächster Referent nimmt uns jetzt mit auf eine Reise. Eine Reise, an deren Anfang ein Experiment stand. Vor etwa 5 Jahren haben sich ein paar Microsoft-Kollegen die Frage gestellt, ob man mit JavaScript, HTML und CSS eine Entwicklungsumgebung im Browser realisieren kann. Heute ist aus dieser Tüftelei ein erweiterbarer, intelligenter Editor geworden, der auf macOS, Linux und Windows läuft. Die spannendsten Stationen dieser Reise, die mit Visual Studio Code noch lange nicht zu Ende ist, beschreibt uns jetzt kein geringerer als der Distinguished Engineer der Developer Division bei Microsoft in Redmond. Er und sein Team sitzen aktuell in Zürich. Er kommt nicht alleine, er bringt einen Kollegen mit, Dirk Bäumert. Dieser Herr, der jetzt gleich ist schon auf der Bühne, aber ein bisschen Intro sei erlaubt. Er ist mit seinem Standardwerk über Design Patterns und seinen Co-Autoren der Gang of Four berühmt, berüchtigt geworden. Heute ist er hier bei uns zu Gast. Herzlich willkommen, Erich Gammer und Dirk Bäumer.
Good morning. So we switched to English because this is streamed live to the internet on channel 9. That's our little demo god. We do lots of demos today, so Dirk is with me from my team to help me stay honest and stay on track. If you would have asked me 5 years ago when I joined Microsoft, I will ever give a presentation about open source and love, I would have asked, what are you smoking, right? Remember in 2001, as Steve Ballmer said, Linux, he branded Linux as a cancer, right? And someone that just had cancer therapy, I know what it means to get rid of that thing. So we will talk a little bit about Microsoft Open Source, how we do it, and also what's interesting in the talk today, all the components we show are open source, which is pretty interesting as well. So let's get started. Who are we? Quickly, know our background. I think it's interesting when it comes to open source. Both Dirk and I were Java babes, right? We developed in Java, developed Java tools for IBM. In 2011, we jumped ship, joined Microsoft, developed since then in JavaScript and TypeScript, of course, also some C Sharp. But now we focus on Visual Studio Code, again, still in tools business. And I was a little bit shocked, Dirk, when I saw this. You know, we have never done anything really, only built tools since about 15 years.
Yeah, I know. We are together in 17 and a half years now, right? And the only thing we did is building software development tools.
And yeah, we are full stack tool developers. Maybe that's how we call ourselves. And interestingly, remember the eclipsing, Dirk did the Eclipse Java tools, and keep that in mind, you will close the circle at the end of the talk. So, the new motto at Microsoft is any developer, any app, any platform. And we take this really serious, and we will show you that during this talk. In the past, Microsoft had the greatest tool for running on Windows. Today, we want to have the greatest tool to run everywhere, right? We love all developers. We want to make you all happy, no matter what tool, what platform, what language even. In the past, the best tool, Visual Studio. Still a great tool, but we now also allow you to use your favorite other editor on another platform because Visual Studio is only available on Windows. Also in the past, a lot of secrets, right? So compilers were kind of hidden, black box, like the C-sharp compiler. This has changed with open protocols. That's a little interesting companion to open source, right? So we not only have open source, we have also open protocol that allow others to participate. And finally, the main topic of today, the transition that Microsoft underwent through, I think, the last 5 years, supported by many like Scott Hanselman was a great open source evangelist, from proprietary to open source.
I think very interesting to add to that is that in the meantime, we not only have open source tools for Microsoft technology, we produce a lot of open source tools for non-Microsoft technology on non-Microsoft platforms as well. A good example are the Go tools. We have for Visual Studio Code or the Python tools, right? The Go tools are very appreciated in the Go community. And that is a good example for MS technology, open source technology for non-MS platforms.
And the good thing is we don't have to build this all ourselves, given that we're open source, if a community jumps in. We also have Swift, which I saw recently, Rust.
Very good.
We will see a whole spectrum of languages. So how relevant is open source to Microsoft? And a good reference benchmark is Hacker News, right? Hacker News is the site where people can vote announcements, give votes, then it comes up. And over time, its gravity, it sinks down. And whatever you do when you're on top of Hacker News, you call your mom and tell her, go to Hacker News, I'm on top of Hacker News, right? So this is the hit list of Microsoft at Hacker News. And what you see here is that many of the top Microsoft news on Hacker News are about open source. Of course, Hacker News is about coding, so it's relevant. But .NET open source, 2 years ago, big announcement, the most points, most popular news on Hacker News. LinkedIn recently, okay, lots of money, maybe that's what happened. But number three, Microsoft launched Visual Studio Code 1.5 years ago. Also made it high up. For 3 days we were up there. We were 3 days happy. My mother had to get got lots of phone calls. Microsoft open sourced the C# compiler. And then look at that. Further down, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer retiring in 12 months. The next Microsoft, Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO, right? You see, open source is very important and really appreciated by the Hacker News community. And a good example for that is this 2 year ago announcement of .NET open source.
Yeah, as you said, it's a very good example, right? When we look back, then we had ASP 4.6, which was only available on Windows. And then 2 years ago, the shift happened that Microsoft open sourced, or ASP was open source before, but then we announced the open sourcement of ASP.NET.Core, which is available on Windows, Linux, and Mac. And that, of course, also asked the questions, what do we do around the tooling? If we have all our runtimes open sourced on all the different platforms, how do we get the appropriate tooling on all these platforms at the end of the day? And I think you will give
us... Okay, now we talked so long, time for the first demo. So, and that will be it. And you know this prompt? That's what you show the demo on. And no, it's not the Mac prompt. It's the Linux, Ubuntu. Okay, so as I said, we take it very serious. Run on any platform, any app with any tool. So I have to do a clean login on my Ubuntu virtual machine. I'm here at the shell. What I will do now, I will do a simple .NET core app. As a Linux developer, I embrace the command line. And I say .NET new. Right? This scaffolds some C# project. And I do the magic code dot to open this generated C# project in code. Okay, and let me open the code. And I get prompted for two things, right? You will see I have red squiggles because I have unresolved dependency, which I say, yes, please restore them. And I also have some assemblies that I need, so I also want to get them. And as things get, the dependencies get resolved, the squiggles have disappeared. So I will show you some coding, console log, we do hello world. We make it a little bit more interesting. Right, from clean space, huh? And then we want to type something from the machine name. Huh? That's a good idea. Get machine. Okay. I get a light bulb. Okay. I want to create this method, generate the method program get machine. And the machine is in system.environment, right? Dot machine name. right? So you see, you have all this IntelliSense. I'm on Linux. I get IntelliSense for C Sharp because I love C Sharp, even though I'm on Linux. And I get still a red squiggle. Sure, I think I need a return statement here. Okay. Fair enough. And you see, you have CodeLens, right? The references get update. I change get machine name here to another one, and you will see no more references, things like that. Nice stuff. Okay, let's go further, right? We want to run this thing. I set a breakpoint. Oops. Return. What is the squiggle?
It's a property.
It's a property. Thank you for thinking with me. And squiggle is gone. We press F5 as usual. Roslyn compiler runs behind it, compiles it, launches it, and gets in the debugger. I'm in the debugger. I can step through stuff, right? I get stack traces. I can hover over values. Let's go over. Okay, and this all on Linux. Okay, I can also, of course, run this thing if I want to in a real terminal, .NET run to see the output, and yeah, hello from Ubuntu, that's my machine. So one more point I want to make, look in the bottom right corner, you see the little flame here that describes what's behind all that.
And I think the interesting part of it, it's powered by OmniSharp, and OmniSharp is another open source project with contributions from Microsoft, where we are involved into. The goal is to bring .NET support not only to Microsoft tools, its goal is to bring .NET support to any kind of tools. So you have OmniSharp integrated into Atom, Brackets, Emacs, Sublime, Vim, and Visual Studio Code. So the idea behind all that effort is not to only have the MS technology on the MS stack, so meet the developers where they are in their favorite editors.
So we take it serious, as I said, right? So now let's look at open source Microsoft, right? And a good reference here is GitHub. And this was a nice little metric that the CEO of GitHub used in his keynote at the GitHub annual conference 2 months ago. And what they measured here is the organizations on GitHub, right? On GitHub, you have repositories which are organized by organizations like Microsoft, Facebook, Docker, Angular, and so on. And what's interesting, Microsoft made it to the top entry because it has the most contributors in the organization. Now, what makes a contributor? You become a contributor if you make a pull request or an issue on GitHub, right? That's how it is. So that was pretty cool to see. And the next thing what's also pretty cool to see is, of course, that our favorite project also made it in a hit list. This is now the repositories with the most contributors, right? And you see that Visual Studio Code that I showed you a minute ago made it in the top 10 list with 5,800 contributors. Okay, now we can say, well, these contributors also include Microsoft contributors, right? How does it look like? So we have some other metric that shows you that it's not just Microsoft contributors.
So, as said, so as the GitHub slide showed, we are talking about Microsoft contributors and non-Microsoft contributors. But at the end of the day, what counts is the contributions and where the contributions are coming from. And this is a nice slide. And Matt Warren did a nice blog post about the open source engagement of Microsoft over the last 2 years. And basically what he looked at when we open sourced .NET, Scott Hanselman lately said that that was really a success, and he really tried to prove it. And as we see here is that, for example, for the top Microsoft open source projects, the majority of the contributions are coming from non-Microsoft contributors. This is really the percentage of contributions. This here are the issues. We get 14% of the issues from MS contributors, where the person is hired by Microsoft. When Visual Studio Code, 70% of our issues are coming from non-Microsoft employees. And the issue activity, very interesting there as well, is that all the MS projects are not starting, having a peak, and then dropping again. So they are slightly gaining momentum over the years. If you look at VS Code, and most of them have even their strongest month in the last 3 months. So it's not they have a peak and drop. It's mostly they gain and gain momentum, and they even going uphill and not start going flattened out.
Okay, so now how do we do it, right? How do we make that Visual Studio Code get gets lots of contributions? So I will lift the secrets and our cookbook on how to make that happen, and it's actually a very simple a circle that we try to follow, right? You have the development team and you have the community. Your goal as a development team is to grow the community and to get valuable feedback. So our cycle, our fool for driving this cycle is transparency, right? We as a development team, we are as transparent as possible. We are transparent about what we work on. We are transparent about our issue state and so on. Of course, on GitHub, that's given. And then we listen to feedback, right? And the interesting thing what that makes this a circle, as the community realizes, you listen to the feedback, the product becomes better, the community will start to grow, and you have this avalanche effect, and you're on the path to total world domination. Okay, there is some other important thing, right? It's like with soap operas, you have to entertain the community regularly. That's our secret trick number two. So we deliver continuously, and we deliver on different cadences. So if you are more interested in stable stuff, we deliver once a month the blue Visual Studio Code, which is the stable one, which we test, we stabilize, which we actually do this week. We have a 1 week stabilization for this period. The green one is the insider build, which is daily, and which is the one we use for our own development. That is, we allow the community to even see daily the new features as they come out, as we develop them. And of course, they help us to test them. And when you see someone giving a demo, watch the color of the code icon. If the icon is green, they are thrill seekers. They do the demo on the latest. They trust us. If it's blue, these are the wimps, right? So today, I'll be a wimp, I guess.
So I think what's interesting to add there is to make something like this happen, you have to have a major investment into your build tools, right? Something like daily builds are not coming out by nothing. So what we did a heavy investment so we can automatically build everything and test everything. We can even release our releases with a mouse click. What you see here is our dashboard for our VS Code builds, which are hosted on Azure. And we have the insider builds and the stable builds. Every build we build is listed here with all its assets attached. And releasing them is pretty easy. It's simply checking off the release thingy checkbox at the end of a release build that makes it public and basically pushes the build out. And if we go over, for example, go to the stable, then you see that we over time even build stable builds quite often, but not all of them are released, right? These are pre-candidates built we have for 1.7, and then when we say, okay, this is the final build, we tested it, it's good, we put a checkbox on it, and then the build goes out fully automatically.
Okay, delivering thing on regular cadence is cool, but only if people are interested. So we try to plan for always having something interesting in there every time. And our benchmark here is, again, Hacker News. And what's interesting, most of our milestones, they make it on Hacker News and get pretty popular, right? So 1.0, of course, a big announcement was very popular. But you see even our dot announcements every week make it very popular. You can even top that. If one of your milestone makes it 3 times to the top list, so 1.7, look at 1.7, you had 1.7, 1.7 with some overload, whatever, and 1.7.1, and you also saw 1.7.2. So what happened? Interestingly, as I said, we want to always add a new cool feature in every release, and in 1.7, the cool and new feature was that we help you setting up IntelliSense when you do JavaScript development. And in order to get good IntelliSense for JavaScript, you need to get a description of the API of a library, right? What we use for that is typing files, which are basically descriptions of the API signatures that types implement in TypeScript, which we use to power JavaScript IntelliSense. These typings are an NPM, which is the package manager for Node. And what we do is now we fetch them all automatically. You bring up code, we look at which models you're using, and then we go and fetch them. What happened there, we were a little bit optimistic in the code by saying, Well, we just try for every module, go to npm, try to download it. Now what happens is not every node module that you use has a typing file. So what happened, we spammed basically npm with requests that it couldn't satisfy with 404s. And the content, the delivery network, they typically don't cache them, right? So what happened within 1 hour that we released 1.7, we got calls from the npm infrastructure person, hey, you are producing a denial of service attack. Which for us, okay, was two things. Stress, first of all, right? You want to be good citizens to npm. It's an open, it's a community infrastructure. We don't want to build our own. You want to participate in that. And of course, the nice thing is we just had to change the checkbox that Dirk showed. One down, you could roll back. The second thing, which was kind of more good news, is we saw how many people are using us, right? So the traffic we produced within 1 hour was the same one, I guess, was it as in India,
yeah,
right?
It was the same traffic NPM gets from India.
From India over whatever, right? So that's pretty impressive. Okay, and that's why we got more interested, right? You get another Hacker News entry that we kind of overloaded NPM, we revert to release, and 1.7.1 then was kind of the happiness that we rolled it back, but still made some new features available.
Another nice anecdote around that one is that in that week when we shipped 1.7, we had a demo lined up for Bill Gates. Mm. And of course, Chris, our PM, wanted to demo ATA, automatic type acquisition. So I put a hidden flag into the code, right? And said, yeah, if this environment variable is set, then we still enable ATA. And but that one was discovered pretty early, right? It took the open source community 3 hours to detect that flag in the source code, and then that public as well. And I was very happy that Joe convinced me not to name the flag Bill Gates demo, right? He calls it.
Still, we survived, and the Bill Gates demo went very well. So reacting to feedback, I had it here just that Dirk can complain how hard it is to be a developer in our team.
Yeah, so everything, as Eric said, is open source, and all our issues come in GitHub. And we get around 50 issues and pull requests a day. And how we triage them at the end of the day is as follows. We have an inbox tracker that looks at everything that comes in, pull requests, PRs, questions, and assigns them to people. And people are requested to look at their inbox and basically answer the questions, ask for more information, close them if they are not valid, and so on. So 50 doesn't seem too big, but in average, only to triage the stuff and to look at it and make a decision whether it's a valid bug or not, that means without actually doing any action and fixing it, takes roughly 10 minutes in average. So we spend basically a working day in a team every day to only do the GitHub triaging without even having fixed anything.
So and the way we make that the team survives that is we rotate that, right? With inbox tracker for 1 week, and also I get, I think, inbox tracker next week or something like that. Okay, transparency, all our plans are visible on GitHub, right? We use GitHub issue trackings to do it. You will see now December 9th is the end game of another iteration. We had the code freeze Monday. Yesterday was testing day. And as it is, and when you're in the end game, most of our items are checked off, which is a good thing. Except I guess the PMs have some item they didn't, the program managers, right? They also are part of our team. They work and they've also planned items. Looks like they haven't delivered their items. So they should feel embarrassed when I share that with the world. Okay, let's look at now our favorite open source project. Of course, favorite because we're deeply involved in it. Visual Studio Code, which is on GitHub. We look a little, it's what's behind it. And then, of course, you want to also show some new stuff with it. So Visual Studio Code, I guess, how many of you know of Visual Studio Code? Great, so we make it short, right? So it's cross-platform. Supports code edit, build debug, commit, and so on. I showed you Linux, I will show you Mac as well. When we started, the issue was what do we build, right? There were many editors available already, right? Atom Sublime. There are IDEs, and we have built IDEs ourselves. So we like IDEs, but we also like editors. So the question is, what do we build?
So the one end of the spectrum are the lightweight editors, right? They are fast, they start up fast, they're most of the time very keyboard-centric, and they are file folder-based, support many languages, at least syntax color-wise, and they have an open workflow at the end of the day. And the other spectrum are IDEs.
Maybe the word on the many languages, right? What we see today is developers today are polyglot, right? They not only work in one language, they work in many languages. They like to use the same tools for all the languages. You don't like to switch tools. And also many workflow is basically a glorified term for they like the command line, right? Many people, they work with the command line and they have the workflow, they have to build tools set around it. We want to also make them happy.
And then on the other end, we have the IDE, which comes with the project system, sophisticated code understanding, which is a plus at the end of the day, integrated debugging, a lot of wizard stuff, designers, Elm integration, test integration, and they are considered most of the time heavyweight, but nevertheless loved by good half of the developers. So what we decided to do at the end of the day is go more to the direction of a lightweight editor, but have good support for the inner development cycle of a developer. That means you can easily code, you have code assist, but you can easily debug as well and have an integration to your source control system.
And this was not just a gut feeling, right? What we do is also what we call customer development. Customer development is interview the customers. What do they want? And we talked to many, many customers, and we found out not every customer likes an IDE. They really love the editors. There are also customers that love their IDE. And there are some which they use both. They use Sublime together with Visual Studio, whatever. Right? And what you also found, it depends on your development workload. Like, you know, web developers, they like editors with an open workflow with the command line. Also, we found that millennials, so people that turned 20 in 2000, they prefer kind of the fast editors over the IDEs that the old boys love that much. Right, so that was very interesting, and also what's interesting, though, in my team, we have a nice balance between millennials and kind of old boys, and these millennials, they really help us to stay honest, and they opened my eyes when I saw how fast they are with the command line and Sublime. I was impressed, right? But what I missed the stuff we love from IDEs, like IntelliSense and so on. So we look into how we can fill this gap also architecturally in a moment. So if we double-click on Visual Studio Code, how does it look like open source-wise? We consume lots of open source. 142 open source components are inside Visual Studio Code. On the right, I show you the third part, is this notice, which we are obliged to deliver with every milestone, which means this needs to be up-to-date every month. And that's quite a challenge, right? So we have tools and infrastructure for doing that, and I think over 90% of the open source components we use are node modules.
Mm-hmm. But as with building, if you start going down the road with open source consumption, there is investment on our end as well in tooling. So we build a lot of tooling around that, for example, automatically generates this third-party notices file, which we have to include in every build we publish. We have put tools in place that check our build against the approvals we have from lawyers to use these open source components and whether we are still on the right version, if we need an upgraded version, if that upgraded version is approved as well, and so on and so on. So consuming that without having proper tools in place is again something that can be very time consuming.
And also notice, yeah, right, this has to be accurate per version number, yep. Right? It's not just that you use the component, you have to say which version of the component.
Yeah. And to make that happen at the end of the day, for example, we use NPM shrink wrap, right? We shrink wrap all our installs to be 100% sure we have for everything the right legal approval, and we do are able to reproduce our builds at the end of the day.
See, and since we do that, the lawyers love us. Of course, we love them too, right? Because it has quite a change. I mean, in the past, lawyers were here in the organization to say no. Today, our lawyers in Microsoft, they're here to help you say yes. That's also part of this five-year transformation to an open source, right? They help you also to what is the risk, which risk can you take? It's not just always say no, it's really balanced, which is quite a mind shift challenge. Change. So now let's look at the bigger open source components in there. And
yeah, and if we look out of which components the Visual Studio Code is built, then we have Electron, which is basically a combination out of Chromium and Node. And then, as a programming language, we use TypeScript, which is open source as well, and the Monaco editor, which is a part that is developed by our team as well. It's an editor that can be hosted in a browser and comes out of the first experiment we did at Microsoft to look if we can build editing programming editing capabilities for the web browser. So Electron itself is maintained by GitHub, very known formally as Atom Shell.
Is a little bit downplaying. They created
it.
Right?
They created it. Sorry, I didn't want to downplay it. So they created it. It's known formally as Atom Shell. Atom uses it. In the meantime, there are quite some well-known open source projects out there that use it as well. For example, Gitkraken, Slack is built with it. Microsoft Teams is built with it. The clients run on Electron. So it's it establishes itself as a cross-platform desktop application framework.
And also when it comes to the platform API, it uses Node, right? So we see Node in further parts of the talk. So let's look at a little bit about TypeScript. When we started 5 years ago, we know we want to build, the initial vision was, what can you do in a browser? Of course, when a browser uses JavaScript. And as I said, we have this nice balanced teams of millennials, and of course, they are very fast in JavaScript, right? Now, we notice you can crank out code very fast, and with unit tests, you can grow to 50,000 lines that you feel comfortable with. What we saw is the bigger it gets our code base, the more challenging became changing it. Right? It became like carving stuff into stone. You cannot just easily. And what our metric was, for every 100,000 lines of JavaScript code, you have to take one more chainsaw and try to juggle. Right? So that was our metaphor. So not very, very easy. In addition, we know JavaScript kind of had its origin more in scripting the browser, right? There is this dilemma. There is JavaScript, the definitive guide, that's it, and JavaScript good, but which is much thinner, right? As much fun as it is, JavaScript has its wrinkles. And the good thing is, we were at the same time as our project started, the TypeScript project started, and we were the early adopters with them, and we used it. It was a nice collaboration between the TypeScript team and Visual Studio Code to make the language richer, and we continuously provide the feedback. Right, so TypeScript gives you kind of is the language that a C-sharp designer, of course, Anders, has a lot of insights what makes a good language that helps create tools. And of course, a type system that allows you to do that is a key to that. And TypeScript gives you an optional type system that enables great tools to support IntelliSense, refactoring, right? You can change your code without stress, which we just noticed with JavaScript you couldn't do anymore. And TypeScript then gets compiled down to JavaScript, which allows you also to use features from future JavaScript standards today with TypeScript, because you have this compilation step. What can happen is that you down-level compile the code to an older version of JavaScript that doesn't support syntactic constructs yet. Finally, TypeScript is not only used by us as an implementation language. TypeScript, of course, has a TypeScript compiler that we use in the tool itself to make the best TypeScript tool. But as you can imagine, we dog food with TypeScript development Visual Studio Code every day. We do it all in there. So we are very interested in good TypeScript tooling. What we also do today, we not only use TypeScript for TypeScript tooling, but also for the JavaScript tooling. Even more than that, the TypeScript tooling today is used to power the JavaScript tooling in Visual Studio as well. It's not only for Visual Studio Code. And this demo to illustrate that, we have a second demo. It's time, right? So yep. We show some Node, Docker, and Azure development.
Okay. What I did, I prepared already the workspace. It's a clone of a to-do application that has a backend MongoDB. It's running as a Node Express app. And you see the source code here. It's a server app. If you as we explained beforehand, we have now automatic type acquisition. So without everything, any additional installations, we get code complete in all the JavaScript code. We can navigate the code, go to definition, and all that stuff.
And we hide, right? We power it with TypeScript. But as a JavaScript developer, you don't want to know TypeScript. Yep. So you don't see any TypeScript artifact, but you still get the benefit from TypeScript.
Of JavaScript. You can debug it, right? If I simply go and run it, we have all that support for Node as well, what you have seen for C-sharp beforehand. So this is the MongoDB. If I start it, it's my to-do app. I hit my breakpoint here, as you would expect, I can continue and then my app is up and running. But at the end of the day, I don't want to have that running locally. I want to deploy it to Azure using Docker. So what I did, I installed the Docker tools, which are available as an extension inside our marketplace. So I installed that. And let's go through what you need to do to get that up and running onto Docker. So the first thing I do is I create the necessary Docker files, which I have support in there. I create them for Node.js. My port I want to talk to is on that port, and the extension created me the Docker files. And since I'm concerned about the resources I take an image that is very well known, very small, for one inside a Docker image. It's mHot Alpine Node. It's based on the Alpine Linux distribution. And I use that one as my base image for my Docker image. Then I go and say, again, Docker. I built my image based on my Docker file. And I want to have that on Docker Hub under DBoimer, my latest Node stuff. So I start building that. And that basically does all the building around the Docker image. What I already prepared on Azure itself is the MongoDB, which we can use as a backend storage in Azure to talk to the application. And I already set up a resource group and a Linux VM to host the Docker containers. And these are two other test web applications that I use to do the testing around my application. So the Docker image is created. What I then do, I create my web application. And this is basically done by me using Azure command line scripts. Right? So instead of building UI around it, what we did, which Eric already explained, is that we support open workflows. But at the end of the day, we shell out into a terminal. And the shelling out is, at the end of the day, simply calling the Azure command line tools with the appropriate arguments to basically create the web application for me, which is now done. And now I go down and deploy the web application.
So basically call the Azure command line.
Yeah, exactly. To do the deployment in Azure, to create the first one, it created the application inside the Linux VM, and now I basically deploy the Docker image into that application to be able to do it. So, and now we can go down the road and open it. We browse our web app, and that should bring us into the browser soon with the web application. Here we go. So. And actually, it's not running. We see that with the spinning wheel. The reason for that one is that we didn't connect the MongoDB yet to the application we have running in the net. We can either do that with another command line tool, or we can simply go and copy the string and put it into the application. We have to refresh here and go into our application in the Azure portal. Set the application setting. And it's MongoDB. And this setting, the application setting, will automatically restart the application. We see it. The service is now unavailable because it's restarting in Azure.
It proves you're on Azure, right?
I'm on Azure. Now I'm done. And Eric to continue.
Okie doke. So what we saw here is, again, this any developer, any platform, right? If you like Node, we have good tooling for you. And you, of course, you get also nice Azure support for that. So let's, Dirk showed you kinds of extensions. He showed you the Docker extension, for instance. So one idea of Visual Studio Code is it's a lightweight tool. And our weapon to keep it lightweight is to not bake in everything into the core, but have many extensions, right? Today, we have over 3,000 extensions in the marketplace. And they're basically our tool to make things highly specific to what you want, right? If I'm a Python developer, I don't need the C-sharp extension, for instance, right? So that's kind of our idea. Let's look at some other extensions. Again, Hacker News is kind of our guide here. Now we should switch probably to...
It's your demo machine.
That's the demo machine.
Oh, sorry.
We should switch to Hacker News. And you see kind of there is a new big entry, which is announcing SQL Server on Linux, right? Which made it to the number 4 of the ever Microsoft hit list. Okay. Let me show you that in action, because we have not only SQL Server running on Linux, we now have also tooling for running and programming against SQL Server on different platforms. And I will show it to you on the Mac. And that's interesting, because what I have here is, when I do a Docker PS, you see I'm running a Docker image which has the... I'm running a Docker container which has the image MS SQL Server on Linux loaded, right? This is 200 megabyte install, trivial, one command line, and then I have can develop against my SQL Server on the Mac. And I will quickly show you something very briefly. I start code again. The Docker container is running. The extension I'm using is the MS SQL extension here, and the MS SQL extension, it can support SQL. And let me just connect it quickly to the database. I connect to the SQL database, which runs in the container. It's the demo profile. And the database I want to use is the sample DB. And let's see, I have here some queries, right? I have a table with all my team members. Right, and you see from different lots of nationalities, right? Now I want to do a query. I'm in a .sql file. Now let's do a query. Select. You see, I get even IntelliSense from Team Schema 1. Same thing, right? No matter what language, you get rich support. Team. Where the team dot nationality. How many Swiss team members do we have in the team, right? Overall, the team is about 18 equals Switzerland, ta-da, and I run it.
I do know the answer.
Well, but you will always tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And you see, we have 3 proud Swiss team members, and of course, Dirk tells me I'm wrong because he just became a Swiss citizenship 2 months ago. It's a nicer story.
Yeah.
Okay, but you saw, right? Again, you develop on a Mac against SQL Server running on Linux, and you have tools on the Mac to do that. And you can do the same tools also run on Linux, right? So that's kind of how serious we are about this cross-platform story. Okay, let's go back to the slides. And you saw this, another love relationship, right? SQL Server loves Linux. Let's look a little bit inside extensions.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about extensions, and we, at the end of the day, we followed up a little bit a different approach with the extensions. So instead of building everything into one IDE, all our extensions are running in an extension host to basically isolate them from the editor itself, to keep the editor always responsive and to make it work very nicely. So all the extensions are basically hosted in there, and that makes it possible that we are always good with the extensions running and how they are developed. Could you switch one further? Sorry.
What did I do wrong?
No, nothing. We have extension development. Sorry, it was my fault. I'm wrong. It's Eric about showing how we develop an extension. Sorry, Eric.
I do an extension in TypeScript just to show you how easy it is and kind of the development style you have. First of all, I generate the extension. We have a generator tool from the command line to scaffold that. I can create an extension in JavaScript or TypeScript. I just do a TypeScript one. It's the cool hover extension. No description. Publisher is me. Not sure how to get to publishing. I don't need a Git repository. So basically now, when you write an extension, it's like writing a little node. Node application. That's why we fetch now all the required node modules. The TypeScript, the tooling, everything is all set up now. And in the end, you also download the API, the API description for the extension for you. And when I go to the cool hover, and I do a code dot, then this is my extension. An extension has a description, right? The package.json. And what's the extension I want to build now? Usually, when you hover over a symbol, we show you some information about the type. That's kind of boring, right? We want to make this a little bit more interesting by showing you more information when you hover around and to make it more entertaining. And you want to do that in JavaScript files. Extensions are loaded lazily. For this reason, you have to say, when should it activate? And I have here the on language. I say, when a language file of type JavaScript, then please activate me as an extension. Okay, so that's basically all the I need to say here besides all this metadata and so on. Now I can go to the code, which is in TypeScript. Let's get rid of some cruft here. So the API is fully described in TypeScript, and of course you get the full IntelliSense experience. So let me start by VS Code is the namespace. I do a language stuff, so I go in the languages namespace, and I want to register what we call a hover provider. Right? Basically, providers are objects that we go and ask for more information. I want to know what the hover is. We ask the hover provider, give me your hover. I want IntelliSense. You go to the IntelliSense provider, give me your list of completions. In this case, I want to register a hover provider. You get all this normal thing for which language, again, for JavaScript. And then let's just call it the hover provider that we will write soon, right? Okay, so I've registered. I need to write the hover provider. So let's call it the hover provider. That was just textual IntelliSense. I type it just to get some more checking. The hover provider, okay. Equals an object, right? We assign it because it's type, right? It will tell me it misses the provide hover method, so I can easily add that provide hover. Oops, that was provide hover. So now I have to return a hover. I could just return. Well, what does it return? Right. Let's quickly peek at the API. So we see that. Yep, I see we're getting close. But I can quickly peek into what's the signature, right? We have this peek metaphor that we developed, and then now Visual Studio supports it as well. So you see it wants to have a hover or a denable. We use really TypeScript type system to the max, right? We use generics, we use union or types in this case. So I will take the shortcut with a snippet rather than compute and type in all the stuff. I have a snippet for that, which basically computes an enrichment of the hover by going to a service which adds some silly software engineering quote. HTTP is not defined. Okay, let's quickly import HTTP. HTTP, and you see kind of in the hover, I go to the net, since it's asynchronous, I return a promise which does the request and then makes a hover object with the response. And I'm ready. Just press F5. This will launch another instance of VS Code, which will then hopefully have the new enriched hover, which gives you all kind of this interesting information as you hover around. If Java, yeah, you can spend lots of time. I don't care if it works on your machine. We are not shipping on your machine, which I like a lot.
They are always very funny.
They're always ready. Yep. Okay, that was the extension stuff. In TypeScript. See, make some silly quotes. That's how you get the attention. So this is all powered by a language API, because our goal is we want to have a very broad and rich API. And what we also saw then is we can make this easier and make this a win-win situation by providing language brains. The language brains not baked into our extension, but extract them in a separate process. And we call these language servers. And here you see you have the current set of language servers. You support a PowerShell language server, which gives IntelliSense for PowerShell. OmniShop, you saw in action before. You have Python, C++, Rust, Eclipse Java Server, we look into the last demo, and of course TypeScript.
So the protocol itself, it's quite easy. So instead of talking directly API, what it does at the end of the day, we send JSON messages over the wire. So when the IDE comes up, we talk to a language server, and then the response comes back. It's more or less an API calling. A good thing around it is that you can implement these servers in the language of your choice. So the C# language support is implemented in C#, Python in Python, Go in Go. So I think we have a good overview about that one on the next slide.
And also, know, since the language servers are separate processes, you can use them from different tools, right? The TypeScript server that we use in Visual Studio Code is also used from Visual Studio, right? It's code sharing.
Dirk, Eric, so I don't want to be unpolite, but time flies when you're having fun.
Okay, we are done.
A couple of more minutes.
Let's see quickly. We had a nice hackathon with Red Hat to get a language extension for Java. And you see different teams working on that, IBM, Red Hat, that look like the Santa Clauses. And Dirk, maybe 10 seconds now, the JavaScript, Java extension, yep. And then we are ramping up.
Okay, as you see here, that basically finishes the circle at the end of the day. We talked about that we both worked on Java tooling, JDT, and what you see here is the Java tooling. At the end of the day in action, it's powered by the Eclipse core Java tooling, and you get all the features you have seen for Java, JavaScript in Java, which you have seen in C#, so you can do find all references, you get stuff like code assist, you can format, and all the stuff you expected, for example, having in Eclipse, you get now powered by the Java tooling of the Eclipse Foundation inside Visual.
And you get also stuff which you don't have in Eclipse, like CodeLens, right?
Yeah,
like
that's
the one reference, for instance. So that's pretty neat. Okay, and shows kind of the openness we have and the collaboration we do across others. We have the same thing for debugging, which we go into detail right now. And you have seen how open we are, how seriously take any tools, any platform, as we develop, and also how serious you are about Microsoft, about open source. And what's really nice about all the thing is it gets appreciated, right? The Verge wrote an article about that, and he gave us a title, Microsoft is now a true open source company. And with these nice words, I'd like to close and wish you a good rest of the day.
Lass uns kurz noch ein bisschen plaudern. Wir brauchen jetzt ein bisschen Umbauzeit,
okay,
bevor Donovan jetzt gleich auf die Bühne kommt. Wir sind auf Channel 9 und reden auch gleich auf Englisch weiter. For all those listeners of Channel 9 or watchers of Channel 9, it's going to continue in English in a couple of seconds. Ganz schnell eine Durchsage, logistische Durchsage noch auf Deutsch für unsere Gäste hier im Saal. Hand aufs Herz, wir sind ja alle nicht wegen der Pausen hier, sondern wegen der Vorträge. Also Sie merken vielleicht, wir sind aus der Zeit ein bisschen gelaufen. Eigentlich sollte jetzt dieser Part um 10.15 Uhr zu Ende sein. Wir hätten dann eine halbe Stunde Pause und um 10.45 Uhr würden die Vorträge wieder losgehen. Wir haben gerade hier ein bisschen krisenkonferiert und haben jetzt Folgendes beschlossen. Wir würden jetzt den Track von Donovan in der Tat 45 Minuten machen. Wer Donovan gestern auf der Bühne gesehen hat, er ist nicht nur unterhaltsam, sondern auch sehr informativ. Es lohnt sich also. Und würden dann die Kaffeepause sozusagen so ein bisschen als Drive-in-Kaffeepause machen. Das heißt, man nimmt sich sein Getränk und sein Gebäck und wandert dann bitte direkt weiter in die Vorträgssäle, dass wir um wirklich 10.45 Uhr dann auch mit den Vorträgen weitermachen können. Es gibt Mittagessen nämlich schon um 11:45, glaube ich. Also von daher, ich denke mal, wir kommen alle hier lebend, also nicht verhungert raus. Also bitte jetzt aber, tun Sie Donovan den Gefallen, nicht abwandern und schon mal am Buffet bedienen, sondern ich würde sagen, wir bleiben alle hier, schauen uns Donovan an und gehen dann gemütlich raus, nehmen uns was und wandern weiter in die Vorträge. Vielen Dank für Ihr Verständnis. Eric, eine Frage, as we continue in English. Visual Studio Code is not just the browser version of Visual Studio, correct? Just to clarify again.
That's 100% correct, right? So what you saw here, Visual Studio Code, is a desktop application that runs on many platforms. However, right, inside Visual Studio Code, there is web technology. It's done in HTML5, JavaScript, TypeScript. And the editor, the Monaco editor, actually can run in a browser, right? And people use that. They embed the Monaco editor in a browser. It's an open source component. So basically, parts of it run in a browser. But as absolutely right, it's not just a browser IDE version of Visual Studio.
Yeah. And Eric, what people might interest is, what about Visual Studio Code, the future of Visual Studio Code? What are the next steps? What is the strategy here?
So As everything, we are very transparent. We have a roadmap, which they have just changed the setup now. I cannot show you that. We have a wiki page which describes the roadmap, which is 6 to 12 months. Something we continue doing is, of course, reacting to feedback. And the methodology we use that is Net Promoter Score, right? This is a methodology where if someone has used your product for a particular time, I guess I forgot, more than 9 days, then we ask a subset of them, would you recommend this to your friend? And if not, why not? So if you get ever asked this dialogue in your Visual Studio Code, please answer, because we really analyze this responsive and use that to drive feedback. And we do that inside Microsoft across the product, right? Visual Studio also has a Net Promoter Score. Visual Studio Code has one. And we're pretty happy with the way we have. But that's one way how we get feedback to react to.
Thanks again, Eric. Danke nochmal an Dirk. Meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, Erich Gammer aus der Schweiz. Herzlichen Dank.